This is a podcast from the Property and Environment Research Center in Bozeman, Montana. PERC is dedicated to improving environmental quality through property rights and markets. Learn more about our work at perc.org. Today, we present a discussion from PERC's Wildfire Solutions Summit on July 22, 2016. Our speaker is Dave Culkin of the U.S. Forest Service. Dave Culkin is an economist and research forester with the Forest Service and an expert in wildland fire risk assessment.
Thanks, Wendy, and thanks for having me over from Missoula this morning. I'm going to be talking about the fire management system in large and how understanding what's happening out there allows us to think more broadly about achieving the cohesive strategy goals. So how does this thing, okay. So in 2009, Congress passed the FLAME Act, starting to recognize the consequences of the increasing budget impacts to the Forest Service. Unfortunately, there wasn't much of a budget fix there, and that's why we still are having this discussion in 2016 about the Forest Service budget related to fire suppression. But it did direct the Forest Service and the Department of Interior to engage with the state and county partners in achieving and building a cohesive strategy on fire management. And within that strategy, we've developed three specific goals: fire-adapted communities, resilient landscapes, and safe and effective fire response. So, you know, as researchers, we're starting to recognize the complexity of the system and using kind of social ecological systems research to kind of evaluate the system. And this is a paper that came out a little over a year ago from Max Moritz and others around the world, basically arguing that communities need to do a much better job of living with fire. Fire will be out there. We can't make it go away. How can we live with this? And there's a lot of great social science going on about how do we understand people's reactions to fire and how does that lead us and help us get to a better future. Even more so, more in depth, is kind of our ecological understanding of fire. The fire suppression paradigm that we're under right now was a very, very active debate 100 years ago, and suppression won out, but we're starting to realize, or we realized even back then, many people, the consequences of removing fire from the landscape, and we're seeing that right now, and lots of great research. This is some work from Malcolm North and others out of the PSW station, arguing that we need to get a lot more fire on the landscape, and we need to do better planning for it, and they introduced some really cool planning tools in this. My group responded to that, recognizing that there is the social and ecological needs to really change the way we look at fire. But also the management system itself is really critical. And if we address the social and ecological, we may not affect the management system. There's a lot of incentives that I think Dean and John will talk about that drive the system in certain ways, and we need to really evaluate the management structure itself. This is a paper we wrote a couple of years ago looking at the suppression response. And basically what we argue is that when we have a fire that intersects with values we care about, we have risk. And when we have risk, we want to make that risk go away. And we do that through fire suppression. But in the current time period, what we recognize is that there's a lot of incentives to overinvest in suppression beyond the socially efficient level. And that leads us to aggressive suppression. And not only that, more importantly, it leads us to a future of more suppression. And the more suppression takes away from our other abilities to change our landscape, to create resilient resilient communities, that leads us to more risk, which leads us to more response. So this is largely known as the wildfire paradigm. The more we fight fire today, the more we'll have to fight fire in the future. And how do we know that this really isn't working? Well, we can go back to some California data. They've great records in California going back almost 100 years. Cho and Kotak in 1924 looked at the decade of 1911 to 1920 and looked at how many fires were there per year, how much area was there. We took those data, Karen Short in my group took those data and just looked at them relative to the last 20 years. And what we found is the annual number of fires between 1911 and 1920 is about the same as what we've experienced over the last 20 years. Furthermore, the amount of area burned is about the same. The difference is you see some very extreme seasons in the recent history. And so we also have fire perimeters. So we look at going through time and just looking at the acreage per time. And what we see is some initially some pretty good amounts of fire. Then we see it calming down In the 30s through the 60s, basically there were some climatic issues that made it relatively mild fire. But then we see as we get to the 90s, 2000s, and the recent decades, we start to see a lot more fire on the landscape. And I can't read those numbers because it's way down there. But you can see that there's just been this increase in fire. 1910 to 1920, we had not that many firefighters out there. We had shovels. That was our fire suppression. Now, when we have fire seasons in California, tens of thousands of firefighters are brought to bear. We have aviation resources, including DC-10s, dropping significant amount of retardant all over the place. We have information systems. We have so much more capacity than we had in the past, and yet we're having worse outcomes. And so, you know, what are some of those outcomes and some of the consequences? This is what's happening to my agency, the Forest Service. About 20 years ago, we spent about 15 to 20% of our budget on fire suppression. 2015, an ominous sign. We broke half, 50%, more than half of everything the Forest Service does is managed fire. And the trends are getting worse. This was done in early 2015, and it painted a really dark picture. The last 2 years are even worse. And what we know is that the costs of fires are going up, our budgets are relatively flat, and the consequences that you see on the right-hand side to all of our other programs are significant. Our ability to manage the vegetation is going way down. Our ability to take care of our roads is degrading. Our facilities are in bad shape. Our recreation opportunities are being limited. We're relying on partners more and more to take on a lot of the responsibilities that are public land management. Also, we're starting to see more and more WUI fires, where several hundred homes will burn up in a single event, usually in a single day. And in some cases, loss of life associated with it. This is the Waldo Canyon fire in Front Range of Colorado between 2011 and 2014, I think. Or was it basically within a 4 year period, they set the record for worst wildfire damages 4 years in four consecutive events. So the Waldo Canyon fire, several homes burned up. Most tragically, Yarnell Hill, this is the memorial at Yarnell Hill to the Granite Mountain Hotshots, 19 firefighters died. We continue to see firefighter fatalities, and that's an issue that the Forest Service and the public and the federal fire agencies are really, really concerned about. So when we look at the system, we're not getting what we want. And so what we know is that the system is growing in complexity. The stressors on the system are getting worse. People are moving into hazardous areas and expecting more. Our stress on our watersheds and our demand for water are getting worse. Climate change is real, and it's definitely affecting the amount of fire that's out on the landscape. And so we have a system that's getting continually worse. What we know over the last 20 years is that the scale of our response has increased dramatically from 20% of the agency to 50%, and it's getting higher every year. But our general approach has not changed. So doing more of the same, you know, the Einstein quote, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and expecting a different result. That's where we're at collectively. So how do we get better? Well, we've been doing some work in systems thinking, and you know, there's a concept of leverage points. Where on a system can you push a system and get the most effect? And this is a great quote from one of the fathers of systems thinking, Jay Forrester. People know intuitively where leverage points are. It's just everyone's trying to push them in the wrong direction. And I think there's some of that going on in wildfire. We're making some progress, but there's still some things going in the wrong direction. This is the Lower North Fork escape prescribed burn in Colorado a few years ago. The Colorado Forest Service recognized the extreme risk that the community members were living under and tried to address that by doing some fuels treatment. Unfortunately, some significant weather, unpredicted weather events occurred, and we had an escaped fire that led us to some tragic results with, I think, 23 homes burned and three people passed away in this event. The state of Colorado, in response, has made it harder to do prescribed fire, has moved fire management from the forest, from the state forester to public protection, and has committed a more aggressive fire suppression strategies. So what can we do about it? This is integrated risk assessment. Over the last decade, we've made some real progress particularly kind of some of the tools coming out of the Missoula Fire Lab and Forestry Sciences Lab that I'm a part of, in understanding how we can look across the landscape before the fires occur and identify where risk is on the landscape and identify who can manage those issues. And there's been great demand for this work. We've seen lots of opportunities. We've worked with national level budget allocation models down to specific project planning work. And we're seeing a lot more communities and state members engage in this risk assessment process. So there's this whole promulgation of these risk assessments. And I think it's really great, and there's a lot of powerful opportunities here. We just have to recognize that there are some standards that, as a community, we have to abide by. COSO and ISO, the kind of the standards-setting organizations for risk assessment in the U.S., I mean, in the world, have set up some real standard guidelines that these risk assessments must follow. And I think as a community, we need to come around those standards and work to advance these tools, and so that we understand what the community needs and what the Forest Service needs may not align, but they should be able to communicate together to get us to a better outcome. Additionally, we can, through the risk assessment process, we can kind of break down the specific risk factors that we have on the landscape, and we can understand who controls those risk factors? What mitigation opportunities are out there that allow us to change the trajectory we're on? Who can most effectively and most cost efficiently do that work? And one of the really important things that we've found is that when we start to break the problem down this way, it can get challenging, and we can recognize that some of the traditional tools really don't mitigate risk. This was from a paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences on the Four Mile Canyon fire, where myself and several other researchers from the Rocky Mountain Station looked at this event. And one of the things that was really compelling about this fire was that it was in Boulder City, right outside of Boulder. And Boulder had invested a lot of money in a lot of different risk mitigation opportunities, fuels, emergency services. Most of the homeowners had said that they were highly knowledgeable about the fire risk and had been doing active management. And yet when the fire occurred, in the course of 8 hours, I think 160 homes burned up. And about a third of the homes that were in the fire perimeter were gone. And everybody was like, well, we were doing the right things. Why didn't this work? And what we came up with is recognizing that when loss occurs is absolutely critical to your mitigation strategies. In the Front Range of Colorado's fires we don't have mass loss of homes when it's 75 degrees and 30% humidity and not windy. All loss in the Front Range of Colorado, if you look at all of these major events, they occur when we're in single digit humidities, when we have major wind events. And our ability to suppress these fires is gone. We have no ability to control these fires. And when we think about mitigation, we have to mitigate towards the conditions where loss occurs. One of the things that came out is people were asking us, like, how could you expect a fuel treatment to work under these conditions? These are the conditions where loss occurs, so any fuel treatment that doesn't address these conditions really isn't changing our opportunities. The other thing we found here is this was a very mixed ownership, and they had been doing a lot of tree removal and fuels removal, but they had not done any prescribed burning. And my colleague Mark Finney is absolutely adamant on this point, that if you don't burn it, you haven't done a fuels treatment. But how do you burn in mixed ownership with homeowners all over the place and coordinating the smoke? So from this, I kind of asked the question, is this a technical or a social problem? Broadly, I think we know what to do. There's a role for technology. We can reduce the uncertainty and try to identify those fires that are going to be most damaging and the strategies that are going to be most efficient. But really, it's largely a social problem. We need to burn more, both prescribed and managed natural fire. We need to eliminate the perverse incentives for developers to develop homes in high-risk areas that are beautiful, but create high risk for the homeowner and the responders. The homeowners themselves, our aggressive suppression response has essentially incentivized them to live in dangerous areas. They're not paying the full cost of the suppression response that society is delivering to them. And then the fire managers themselves, and I'm not just talking about Forest Service fire managers, I'm talking about the fire management community as a whole, has perverse incentives that require them to address risk today that creates more risk into the future. I also think the requirements to really broadly consider the future consequences of today's actions really needs to be better thought out. So in conclusion, wildfire management is conducted in a complex web of interrelationships with federal and non-federal partners. There's these positive feedback loops, and in systems talking, positive feedback loops accelerate the system. And what we're seeing is an accelerating system of increasing risk and increasing demand of response. The only negative feedback to fire is fire itself. Thus, the argument that we need to burn more. Again, my colleague Mark Finney argues that the amount of burning we need on the landscape to get it to a point where fire becomes self-limiting is about 5 or 6 times our average annual burning. And that includes both prescribed fire and wildfire. So we need 5 or 6 times in the western U.S. as much fire as going on out there. I think we also need to recognize that there are places like the southeastern U.S. that has gotten on top of this problem by burning. The ability to expand the use of fire is constrained by our current ecological conditions, expanded development, and the management structures we have. The Forest Service has a dominant role in U.S. wildfire management, and it frequently conflicts with our conservation mission. And that's a real struggle that we're coming to grips with as an agency. Cohesive strategy has been successful in bringing the partners to the table. So we have achieved some level of cohesion here. We don't yet have a strategy, I would argue. And then finally, to succeed, such a strategy must emphasize alternatives to the current suppression-dominated approach.
That's Dave Culkin from the U.S. Forest Service. You've been listening to the PERC podcast from the Property and Environment Research Center in Bozeman, Montana. PERC is dedicated to improving environmental quality through property rights and markets. Learn more about our work at perc.org.